Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents International Security, A Very Short Introduction by Christopher S. Browning. Narrated by Peter Ganim.
Chapter 1. Introduction. International security is an evocative and often highly charged subject. In popular perception, it is a world of high politics, of international summits, and not least, of war and conflict. International security readily conjures up images of nuclear weapons and other military arsenals, of soldiers and blue-helmeted United Nations, UN peacekeepers, and of geopolitical struggles as states compete in a zero-sum game for power and influence, and ultimately, for national survival. International security is also often seen as out there, as what happens beyond safe national borders, and a matter of primary concern to statesmen, diplomats, and generals, a world of secrecy and high-stakes poker. Indeed, statesmen and military elites often see themselves as tasked with the responsibility of identifying threats to the nation and providing means of protection and response, and as such, international security is also often the arena where politicians see the chance to gain reputations for great statesmanship, thereby securing their place in the national canon. This, however, is not the whole story, and other images can tell a different tale. Media pictures of refugee camps, child soldiers, migrants drowned at sea, Somali pirates, national liberation struggles, retreating ice caps and burning oil wells indicate a less glorious and more complicated realm. And while, from a Western perspective, such images may still locate international security abroad beyond safe national borders, other images can tell a different story again. Look hard enough, and our everyday lives are increasingly intertwined with worlds of international security. From the proliferation of surveillance systems and border controls designed to identify potential threats and suspicious behavior, to the political, economic, and social consequences of the purchases we make in an age of globalized production networks. Understood this way, international security affects us all, both directly and indirectly, and is therefore too important just to leave to statesmen and generals. These various images provide a brief illustration of the complexity and breadth of contemporary debates about international security. Whereas during the Cold War, the international security agenda was dominated by concerns about the East-West conflict, the balance of power, nuclear proliferation, and military strategy, today a host of other issues have also found their way onto the agenda. Traditional concerns have obviously not gone away and can be seen in recurrent speculation about the implications of the rise of China on world order, in the rhetoric of a new Cold War in respect of a revanchist and emboldened Russia, in debates over whether future security concerns will be dominated by a clash of civilizations, and in concerns over nuclear proliferation to rogue states. Today, though, such issues are also often connected with concerns over the rights and wrongs of humanitarian intervention, the spread of infectious diseases, food supplies, migration patterns, transnational organized crime, terrorism, environmental change, and poverty. For some people, the expansion of international security agendas is an unwanted distraction from what should be the core concerns of war, peace, and state security. In contrast, this book argues that expanding understandings of the nature of international security acknowledges the complex dynamics and multiple factors that frequently underlie narrower concerns with war and peace. Moreover, expansion has also been accompanied by more radical implications. The increasing emphasis on humanitarian and ecological concerns that seek to locate the lived experience of people at the heart of debates about security has, for example, challenged the priority traditionally accorded to states. Put differently, in a globalizing and increasingly interconnected world, people are becoming increasingly aware of how security dynamics in different parts of the world, and even in their local neighborhoods, are often intimately connected. The traditional domestic-international divide when talking about security is therefore increasingly breaking down. This book provides an insight into this complexity and some of the questions it raises. Broadly speaking, the book is divided into two halves, with chapters 3 through 5 focusing on more traditional security concerns of war, peace, and international order, and chapters 6 through 9 homing in on key debates central to the expansion of the international security agenda. In tackling these issues, however, the book seeks to sensitize readers to 3 core analytical points. First, debates about international security cannot be separated from considerations of power and politics. This can be seen, for example, in how debates about the relative merits of the expansion of the international security agenda ultimately raise questions concerning who gets to set the agenda or frame how particular issues are understood as threats and to whom. Second, debates about international security also inevitably entail considerations of justice, morality, and responsibility. This is particularly evident when considerations of human rights, the distribution of resources, and responsibilities for tackling climate change are on the table. Given these first 2 points, it is important to emphasize that international security issues are almost inevitably sites of contention, since they typically evade any singular way of understanding their nature or the appropriate responses necessary for their resolution. Third, the book will also draw attention to the inherent limitations of the structure of the international system in tackling many contemporary international security issues, and indeed, suggests that sometimes the problem may lie in the very nature of the system itself. Before turning to substantive debates, however, the book begins with a theoretical chapter. This is necessary since any understanding of the political and ethical nature of debates about international security requires understanding that such debates often have their background in the different conceptual and theoretical assumptions that different actors have about both the content and nature of security and of what constitutes the appropriate concern of international politics. Chapter 2, A Contested Nature. When people talk about security problems, they do so in terms qualitatively different from any other type of problem. Security is seen as an imperative, not an option. People do not obsess over cost-benefit analyses or about opportunity cost. They get on with what has to be done because they understand that security goes right to the heart of the basic contract between state and citizen. In the same vein, when it comes to security, the worst-case scenario is prepared for. You don't sit around and hope for the best. Margaret Beckett, UK Foreign Minister. Security is important indeed. Many people think it is of utmost importance and a primary value. Without security, we may be unable to pursue secondary goals of the good life. Indeed, without security, we may become immobilized by existential anxiety. In this respect, security is also the language of political priority. Invoking security is to raise the specter of catastrophe if actions are not taken immediately. Invoking security plays to our fears, but it is also the language of mobilization. Security gets things done. For this reason, the language of security is also attractive and can function as a rhetorical trump card for governments. Presenting issues as matters of national security, for example, can legitimize governments in diverting scarce resources to favored issues, justify curbing civil liberties, or keeping discussions, information, and intelligence out of the public domain. Not least, it can justify using military force. However, while we may agree security is important, it is also an elusive concept. The preceding quote, for example, tells us little about the actual content of security or what it means in practice. Indeed, disagreements about the nature and meaning of security are common and constitute the heart of many political debates. As it happens, the preceding quote is taken from an address in which the UK Foreign Minister was making the case for prioritizing climate change as a security issue. Not long ago, such claims might have been ridiculed, but the idea of climate change as a major security threat has today gained broader acceptance. However, as discussed in Chapter 7, people still disagree about precisely in what sense climate change is a security issue. While a case can also be made for suggesting that thinking about it in security terms might itself be a cause of significant problems. Questioning security. One way of picking apart the elusive nature of security is to ask some questions of it, the most obvious being, what is security? Answers vary, and one question easily begets others. For example, does security simply entail physical survival, or should it also concern conditions of existence, such as a certain level of welfare or the preservation of core values? The UN, for example, distinguishes between two aspects of security. What they term freedom from fear emphasizes threats of physical violence and repression. Freedom from want, in contrast, emphasizes the provision of basic human needs. In each case, though, the question still arises as to where we draw the line and pass from a position of insecurity to one of security. In other words, how much fear is acceptable, and how much food and material possessions, or indeed education, employment, housing, and health, is actually required to meet basic human needs? Moreover, are these questions best answered in absolute or relative terms? A second question concerns whose security counts. Traditionally, debates about international security have emphasized the security of states, as states were seen as the principal actors of international politics, theoretically understood as charged with upholding the security of their citizens. In practice, however, states have often been a source of considerable insecurity to their own citizens. In many places, for example, apartheid South Africa, Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe, Saddam Hussein's Iraq, state security has rather been synonymous with upholding the security of the ruling regime. It is increasingly argued, therefore, that the security of other things should be prioritized instead. We might, for example, emphasize the security of ethnic groups, individuals and/or humanity, social classes, the environment, or even values like liberty and freedom. The choices we make matter, since prioritizing the security of one object might be detrimental to the security of others, as when preserving a state's security requires sending soldiers off to die. A third important question concerns what counts as a security issue. Put differently, this is a question of how threats are identified and prioritized. It is tempting to think that threats are self-evident and objectively knowable. However, in practice, this is not the case, and the identification of threats and their ranking in terms of importance is a matter of disagreement and politics. For instance, whether high levels of immigration are viewed as a fundamental threat to social cohesion and the welfare state, or a solution to endemic national economic problems related to skills shortages, aging populations, and pension provisions, is hotly debated in many countries. In principle, almost anything could be constituted as a security threat to someone or something. However, whether particular threat claims garner attention will depend on how well they resonate with the security concerns of others, the persuasiveness of the argument, and not least, on the power and position of the person or group making the claim. In this respect, the security concerns of the powerful and powerless often diverge, while it is often the concerns of the powerful that dominate international security agendas. the prioritization accorded to international terrorism since 2001, with attention in turn diverted away from problems of international development, is a case in point. Finally, defining the nature of security, the security object to be prioritized, and the nature of the threat still leaves open the question of how security is to be achieved. This gets to the heart of policy concerns and debates about security. For example, historically speaking, and especially when international security has been equated with state security, security has often been viewed in competitive terms and as dependent upon the accumulation of economic, territorial, and military resources. In other words, security is seen by some as in limited supply, with one's stock of security easily conflated with one's level of relative power. However, while a focus on possessions and resources in a battle for survival can easily foster a competitive zero-sum mentality with respect to security, an alternative perspective is to view security as something held in common that can be fostered through developing positive relationships between individuals and groups that encourages more harmonious relations. Such views, for example, are more likely to emphasize the promotion of justice and human rights in the building of security. Security, therefore, can be approached in both competitive and cooperative terms. However, those agents responsible for promoting security can also vary considerably. Traditionally, and as indicated by the opening quote, the state has been the actor most frequently tasked with the role of security provider. However, as threats have become increasingly transnational, questions have also been raised as to whether states are still the most effective agents for tackling contemporary security challenges. Increasingly, alternative security providers are being identified, including international and regional organizations, non-governmental organizations, social movements, and private security contractors. The broadening and deepening of international security. Conceptual debates about the nature of security have emerged in conjunction with key developments in the broader international security environment. During the Cold War, a rather limited view of security dominated, in which international security was, for the most part, conflated with national security. One result was an emphasis on military strategy and the need to uphold the balance of power of the Cold War conflict. International security, therefore, was largely reduced to questions of the use and role of military force in a competitive international environment in which states were viewed as almost inevitably pitted against each other. However, as the Cold War unfolded, this view was increasingly challenged. First, the proliferation of nuclear weapons and their refined explosive power fostered awareness of the interdependent nature of security. Contrary to expectations that more military power begets more security, increased numbers of nuclear weapons, which peaked at around 70,000 in the 1980s, only seemed to enhance mutual insecurity. One result of this was an influential report of the Palma Commission published in 1982. As indicated by its title, Common Security, A Blueprint for Survival, the report argued that the realities of nuclear war meant that unfettered competition between states could be potentially catastrophic. Instead, the planet's very survival depended on recognizing that in a nuclear age, security required restraint and common action. The report therefore encouraged the adoption of non-offensive force postures and fed into initial moves designed to promote nuclear disarmament. Moreover, by the 1980s, the narrow focus on military issues was also being challenged. A key intervention was made by Barry Buzan in his seminal work, People, States, and Fear, which argued for a sectoral approach to security on the grounds that military security concerns are usually dependent on developments in non-military fields. Key sectors identified were those of military, political, economic, societal, and environmental security, the central argument being that states have to cope with various threats beyond the purely military. Indeed, military threats are often secondary in nature and result from competition between states in the other sectors. For example, the Cold War military standoff was a consequence, not the cause, of East-West disagreements about the nature of the good life, societal sector, and the most suitable economic system for advancing this, economic sector. Focusing narrowly on military issues therefore entailed the danger of overlooking the actual causes of many conflicts. Sectors of Security, Barry Buzan. Military security concerns the interplay of states' offensive and defensive capabilities and their perceptions of others' military intentions. Political security concerns the need to uphold the organizational stability of states, their systems of government, and the ideologies that give them legitimacy. Threats may include other states seeking to interfere in a country's internal affairs, such as the Soviet Union's and the United States' respective interference in Eastern Europe and Central America throughout the Cold War. Economic security concerns ensuring sustained access to the resources, finance, and markets on which the state's welfare and power is based. Threats may relate to economic dependencies, such as the EU's high dependence on Russia for energy resources, or developing countries' dependence on cash crops. However, the power of markets in a globalized world makes this a concern for all states. Societal security concerns the need to sustain traditional patterns of language, culture, and religious and national identity and custom. Threats include genocidal attempts to eradicate ethnic or cultural identities, such as the Holocaust of the Second World War. A more contemporary example is the rise of right-wing anti-immigrant parties in Europe and their fear that high levels of immigration threaten established understandings of nationhood. Environmental security concerns the need to maintain the local and planetary biosphere on which all other human enterprises depend. Threats include the potential effects of climate change, such as rising sea levels inundating low-lying states in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. However, while the sectoral approach broadened understandings of security, it also left security centered on the state as the principal focus of security concern. Throughout the Cold War, this position was challenged from various standpoints. Third World scholars, for example, argued that prioritizing state security might make sense in a Western and developed world context, but was less persuasive in the developing world, where cohesive state structures were often absent and where internal legitimacy for ruling regimes was often lacking. Indeed, throughout much of the Third World, the state often appeared less as a security solution and more a cause of considerable internal insecurity for citizens. Moreover, the preoccupation with the Cold War conflict and state-state security interactions also meant that the inequities of the global economic system and associated problems of underdevelopment that afflicted a much larger proportion of the world's population tended to be overlooked. This criticism was succinctly expressed by Johann Galtung, an eminent peace researcher, who suggested that while traditionally the focus had been on direct violence, war, and physical acts of violence, a fully rounded understanding of security would also require focusing on structural violence. He defined structural violence as policies which either knowingly or unknowingly cause suffering to others, such as people unable to access food and dying of starvation in conditions of global surplus food production. One implication of such arguments was that security should therefore be deepened beyond the state to a focus on people and systemic economic structures. Another, however, was to emphasize the interdependent nature of security, with Galtung's implied suggestion being that instead of maximizing power and resources, global security might be better achieved through distributing them more equitably. During the Cold War, such arguments were often marginalized. However, with the Cold War's end, the dominance of statist accounts of security was again challenged. The UN, in particular, has taken a lead with its development of the concept of human security. In its 1994 report, Redefining Security, the Human Dimension, the United Nations Development Program, UNDP, made the case for placing humans at the heart of debates about international security. As they put it, focusing on traditional questions of the national interest, territorial sovereignty, and nuclear deterrence was far removed from the key security concerns faced by most ordinary people, which might instead be centered on questions of hunger, disease, and repression, education, housing, and employment. Although the concept of human security has its detractors, listen to Chapter 6, the key point is that conceptions of security are today much broader and deeper than they were throughout the Cold War. In turn, this breadth has inspired a diverse range of theorizing about both the mechanics of international security and the normative goals of security policy. Theorizing Security. Having a sense of different theoretical approaches to security is important if we wish to understand the political nature of debates about the topic. This is because even policymakers prone to depicting questions of international security as uncontested givens rely on theoretically informed assumptions about the nature of security, whether they acknowledge this or not. Being aware of different theoretical approaches is therefore one way of expanding both our understandings of the topic, but also the options we might see available when thinking about and responding to particular international security issues. Over the years, the scope of theorizing about international security has expanded significantly, and since the end of the Cold War, the field has become characterized by a proliferation of approaches, drawing on diverse theoretical traditions and schools of thought. Broadly speaking, though, this rich theoretical tapestry can be divided into a tension between so-called traditional and critical approaches to security. Traditional approaches typically claim to take the world as it is and see theorizing as a largely neutral exercise in determining the objective nature of international security dynamics. Such theories therefore adopt a scientific approach to knowledge, meaning that they hold that theoretical claims about how international security works, what constitutes a threat, what the best responses may be, etc., can be tested against empirical reality. Theories can therefore be refined in light of findings in order to take account of unexpected anomalies. Being premised on maintaining a distinction between the world of theory and the world of empirical reality, such approaches can be characterized as having an orientation towards problem solving. That is to say, instead of advocating radical change, they instead seek to provide guidance as to how best to cope with the world and the international security environment as it is. For their critics, this makes such approaches status quo oriented, while for their defenders, such criticisms are blind to the assumed basic mechanics of security. Traditional approaches to security have tended to place military conflict between states at the heart of the international security agenda, with the most influential approach being that of realism and/or neo-realism. At a philosophical level, realist, neo-realist approaches express a generally pessimistic view of the human condition, seeing violent conflict between humans as almost inevitable. Realists base this view on a negative understanding of human nature as essentially selfish and desirous of power, while neo-realists argue it is the anarchic structure of the international system which turns world politics into a continual struggle between states for dominance. The international system is anarchic in that it lacks any overarching central authority able to regulate the behavior of states by enforcing contracts and ensuring they act cooperatively. In the absence of such a central sovereign authority, Neorealists argue states cannot rely on the goodwill of others and are therefore
Sample complete. Ready to continue?